It may have occurred to you that in talking so far about outrage, I haven't, you know, I mean, I defined hazard pretty carefully, but I haven't defined outrage much at all, except to say it's all that stuff that the public sees as part of the risk that the experts don't. So let's define outrage a little bit more carefully. When a client comes and says, help me figure out how to manage this outrage up or down, you know, I will certainly sit with a list like this and ask myself, which of these is dominating in this situation? And, you know, it's a Venn diagram. Which are the ones that are dominating? Which are the ones that I have, you know, a handle on that I think I can move? And then I'm looking for the intersection of those two questions, the ones that are big and I can move. And that's, you know, that's what I ask when I'm hired by an activist group to help them get people upset, and that's what I ask when I'm hired by a company to help them get people calm. So what I'm suggesting is that if a risk is voluntary, natural, familiar, not memorable, not dreaded, and so on down the safe side, people are going to shrug it off even if it's quite likely to kill them. And if a risk is coerced, industrial, exotic, memorable, dreaded, and so on down the risky side, people are quite likely to find it upsetting, angering, and frightening, okay, even if the technical people feel confident that the hazard is quite low. Okay. So let's, for the fun of it, do a quick and dirty outrage assessment of a risk that, as far as I know, none of you are working on. Because I don't want to, you know, you'll fight with me if I take one you're working on. So I want to take one that you're not working on, and you'll find it easy to assess. Let's look at the outrage associated with genetically modified food. Let's assume that as I ate breakfast this morning, I read in the newspaper that my breakfast cereal contained genetically modified ingredients. And we'll imagine that I didn't know that until I read the story in the newspaper. I am eating Frankenfood, okay? And I didn't know it until I read the story, okay? And the question we're asking is, how much outrage is that knowledge likely to provoke in me? And that gets to the question somebody asked of how do you, not so much how do you measure outrage as how do you predict outrage? You can measure manifest outrage in all kinds of easy ways. You count the number of angry letters people are sending you. You count the number of rocks they throw at your car. You know, there are lots of sort of manifest measures of outrage once it's being expressed. But of course, what we'd like to do is measure latent outrage, measure the capacity for outrage of a particular situation or a particular policy or a particular agency action. So that's what we're talking about here. And we're going to measure how much outrage is likely to arise when I discover that I'm eating genetically modified food. So let's do a quick assessment. Is my exposure to genetically modified food voluntary or coerced? Coerced. Now, we could make it voluntary, right? All we would have to do is label it. If there were, you know, a mutant aisle and a non-mutant aisle in the supermarket, and people were able to shop in the aisle they preferred, then the exposure would be voluntary. But in my country, as in yours, there's very substantial resistance to labeling genetically modified ingredients in food. And of course, you know, when I eat at the hotel, I don't get any labels at all. So as long as it's not labeled, my exposure is coerced. Is it natural or industrial? Industrial. It's actually worse than industrial. I mean, if these were Likert scales instead of just being dichotomies, you know, there's natural, you know, there's God's ingredients, and then there's industrial, you know, there's Orica's ingredients, and then there's profoundly unnatural, you know, things God never thought of. And, you know, there are two industries that raise that, and genetic modification is one, and anything nuclear is the other, where you're coming up with either elements or creatures that God never came up with. And that's as unnatural as it gets. But we're reducing all of these to dichotomies, so we'll just say it's industrial. We're batting two for two, familiar or exotic? Exotic, it's not a familiar risk to me. The industry could make it familiar to me should they choose to do so, but at the moment it's exotic. Memorable or not memorable? highly memorable, right? What is the source of the memorability of genetic modification? Where does that memorability come from? Hollywood, abstract, fiction. You know, I mean, you know, the Jurassic Park, you know, the gene that ate Chicago. I mean, you know, I mean, everybody in this room understands that if there are gene splicers in lab coats in the first reel, there will be monsters running amok in the third reel. Okay. So the memorability comes mostly from fiction. And, you know, I mean, it starts with books, right, and comic books and all of that. But it works its way through to movies. And we all have vivid images of gene splicing running amok. So we're batting 4 for 4. Dreaded or not dreaded? Dreaded. It's a bad way to die eaten by your breakfast cereal. There are ways of dying that are low on people's dread list, and there are ways of dying that are high on people's dread list. Right now, consider the difference between Zika and dengue. You know, they're both arboviruses. They're both carried by mosquitoes. They circulate in exactly the same areas because they're carried by exactly the same mosquito. Dengue kills more people than Zika, but Zika is thought to cause birth defects. Okay, and that's highly dreaded. So, you know, we may actually make progress on dengue because we're so upset about Zika. You know, if we get the mosquitoes because we're worried about Zika, we will save a lot of lives of people who would otherwise have died of dengue. Everybody see the point? you know, but highly dreaded, 5 for 5. Chronic or catastrophic? That's a tough one. The hazard is chronic. I eat a little bit more of this stuff every day. But my awareness of the hazard is catastrophic. I didn't know about it until this morning when I read the story in the newspaper, and suddenly I realize how awful it is. So in a communication context, it's catastrophic. In a technical context, it's chronic. This is like groundwater contamination, which a lot of you work on. Groundwater contamination is chronic to you. It is catastrophic to the people who discover on an identifiable day that their groundwater is contaminated. Okay? And they have experienced a catastrophe, notwithstanding the fact that groundwater moves at glacial speeds. Okay? Everybody see the point? Still batting 1,000. Knowable or unknowable? Knowability is actually several variables. Part of it is, do the experts understand? Part of it is it detectable? Is it visible? Very unknowable. You can't detect it. But most importantly, I mean, the most important component of knowability is expert disagreement. Okay? You know, where one expert says, I eat it for breakfast, in this case, quite literally, and the other side's expert says, even thinking about it will give you cancer. And people exposed to that kind of expert disagreement say, oh shit, they don't know what they're talking about. You know, I mean, if, you know, if on a 10-point scale, you know, half the experts say it's a 3 and half the experts say it's a 7, obviously they don't know what they're doing. It might be 14. Obviously they're not going to fix it. They're busy arguing about it instead. So we all have an algorithm that says expert disagreement is a sign of trouble. And our outrage goes through the roof when there is expert disagreement. This is not irrelevant to the work you guys do. I mean, you can very often reduce outrage, if you choose to do so, by agreeing with opponents' risk assessments. You know, and they can reduce outrage if they choose to do so by agreeing with yours. If some people say it's a 3 on a 10-point scale and some people say it's a 7 on a 10-point scale, you're going to get a lot of outrage. If everybody says it's a 3, much less outrage. If everybody says it's a 7, much less outrage. Okay? So whoever wants the outrage down to the extent that they can, and I understand that bright line legal standards make this hard, you know, maybe make it impossible, but anyone who wants to reduce the outrage wants to put a stop to the expert disagreement, which is the main source of outrage with regard to knowability. Meanwhile, lots of expert disagreement about genetically modified food, very hard issues of detectability and knowability, so we're batting 1,000. Individually controlled or controlled by others? Who controls my exposure to genetically modified food? Others, yeah. I mean, you know, arguably, I mean, maybe you'd say farmers, maybe you'd say food companies, probably you would say Monsanto and the seed companies that are selling genetically modified products to begin with. whoever controls it, I don't. Control and voluntariness, it should be obvious, tend to go hand in hand, but they are conceptually very different. Voluntariness is who gets to decide, and control is who gets to implement. So, if your spouse says, I'm going to go to the store, do you want to come with me? Do you want to ride shotgun? Your trip to the store is voluntary, but you're not in control because you're not driving. If your spouse says, would you please go to the store for me and pick up some stuff, your trip to the store is no longer voluntary, but you are in control. Okay. So they very often go together, but they don't have to go together. In this case, they go together. The absence of labels makes it both involuntary, makes it both coerced and controlled by others. Fair or unfair? Unfair. Biggest issue with fairness is the distribution of risk compared to the distribution of benefit. Okay. If I am getting more of my share of the risk than I, the hazard in my terms, than I am of the benefit, then the risk is unfair. So I want you to understand this. So let me use this to make sure the whole dynamic is clear. Consider genetically modified medication. Consider something like genetically modified insulin for diabetics. The vast majority of insulin for diabetics is genetically modified. You can get natural insulin, but nobody wants it. It's more expensive and it's much less pure. It's sort of a stupid thing to want. Even people who eat organic prefer, if they're diabetic, genetically modified insulin. Okay, are you with me? Okay, so when you look at genetically modified insulin, I am getting a lot of benefit. Therefore, I experience the risk as fair. Therefore, my outrage is low. Therefore, I underestimate the hazard. Let me say that again. I am getting a lot of benefit. I'm getting more benefit than other people, and maybe more benefit than hazard. I'm getting a lot of benefit. Therefore, I experience the risk as fair. Therefore, I experience very little outrage. Therefore, I underestimate the hazard. Now, compare that to genetically modified food, okay, where the benefit is going to maybe the farmer and certainly the seed company, but there aren't any genetically modified foods yet with meaningful consumer benefits. Okay, so as I eat genetically modified food, I'm not getting any particular benefit. Therefore, the risk is unfair. Therefore, the outrage is high. Therefore, I overestimate the hazard. If these factors are leading to high outrage, you're going to have high hazard perception. If these factors are leading to low outrage, you're going to have low hazard perception. Okay? Which is why it pays to track these factors and figure out what you're up against. Morally relevant or morally irrelevant? Is genetically modified food just a matter of safe versus dangerous, or is there a good versus evil issue in there somewhere? Yeah, there's a moral issue in there. The Catholic Church, among others, has taken more weakly than it used to. It initially took a very strong anti-genetically modified food position. It's now moderating that position somewhat, but there are still lots and lots of people, who think it is evil to create creatures that God never thought of, that it's arrogant and linked to, if we're going to do it with fish and we're going to do it with apples, how soon will it be that we're doing it with people and we're doing, designer babies? And there are all kinds of not stupid fears linked to the moral issues surrounding genetically modified food. So there are lots of people, including some very smart people, who say, let's not go near there. It's a slippery slope. Let's stay far away from genetically modifying anything. Okay. And then there are other people who don't see this as a moral issue at all. So the fight over morally relevant versus morally irrelevant is part and parcel of the fight over genetic modification. Number 11, trustworthy sources or untrustworthy sources. Do we trust the people who snuck genetically modified ingredients into our food when we weren't looking? Okay. The question answers itself. I consulted with Monsanto back in the 1980s when the question was on the table for them. Should we do this candidly or should we do it sneakily? and they made a conscious decision to do it sneakily on the grounds that it's probably easier to say you're sorry than to ask forgiveness than to ask permission. They asked permission of regulators where they had to, but they consciously decided not to ask permission of the public, to just do it and hope that the public would get used to it. So far, that has turned out not to be a wise decision, but, you know, in maybe 50 years from now, they'll look back at it and say that was the right way to go. Depends how you want to assess it. But for sure, they forfeited trust. And my point is, they forfeited trust on purpose. They decided that they couldn't afford to be trustworthy, that if they told the truth, they would be told, no, thank you. Thank you for being honest, and we don't want this technology. So they decided to sneak the technology in without being honest. And finally, responsive process versus unresponsive process. This is a broader concept. It has to do with, do you answer your critics? Do you listen to them thoughtfully? Are you courteous when you're responding? All the sort of relationship variables. And I used to pick this one to talk about because it was a perfect 12 out of 12. I have to say now it's like 11 and a half out of 12. Because they have become much more responsive in their process in the last decade. The genetically modified food industry, which hasn't learned much from this list, has at least learned that they can make some progress on number 12 by treating their critics with more respect. And I have to kind of give them half credit for number 12, which is too bad because it used to be a perfect example. And now it's an almost perfect example.